Listening and seeking out feedback and being really curious, fundamentally being really curious about people's perspectives. The best leaders are just carnivorous around perspectives and opinions and information.
You're listening to The Stand Up from Monday.com, where we talk to real leaders every episode to get their sharpest insights. I'm so excited to have David Hanrahan here with us on The Stand Up. David is the SVP of People Success at SolarWinds, and he's held a variety of executive roles at tech companies, including Eventbrite, Niantic, Twitter, and Flare, and has more than 15 years of HR leadership. David, so excited to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. I'm going to dig right in, David. And one of the things that I think for many leaders and for many managers, it's very easy to build a strong team culture when the team's really small, when you're working a small company. It's easy to control. There's a lot of factors that you can control. Would love to hear some of your secrets or your advice for kind of balancing company culture when companies are big and they're at scale. How do you even tackle that problem?
Yeah, you know, it's almost as if kind of scale going from 100 to 1,000 is this sort of like gravitational pull away from what you originally designed as your culture. There's a great article called The Culture Factor from HBR a few years back. And the point of the research from this article is that there's a very important topic called convergence and divergence of cultures. And what they found in this article, this research, was convergence is like if you ask, you know, the average person in the finance team, the average person in product, if you ask them to describe the company, what it's like at its best and what it's like when it's at our worst, you have convergence when mostly what people describe is very similar, little shades, little variants here and there, but it's mostly similar. You have divergence if for whatever team or site or whatever pocket of the company is it's described very differently. So an example would be, hey, over here, we pride ourselves on being a learning culture, a learning orientation, but over here, it's very results-driven. It's kind of cutthroat. It's sink or swim. So you have divergence when that's happening, but the convergence, the more that you have convergence over time, the more that you get the benefits of engagement of strong cultures in terms of customer satisfaction, profits. They sort of outlined all these benefits of convergence. So engagement surveys are not really the culture. They're the strength of the culture. Qualitatively, we need to be asking ourselves periodically, what are we like when we're at our best? What are we like at our worst? See how that changes. It might be time to revise the values of the company. We found this at Eventbrite and at Twitter. We somewhat had to revise and tweak them to just sort of new realities and a new stage that we were in over time. Revising the types of values that we have in the culture that we have, what we're shooting for, is not a bad thing. A big proof point in the culture, whether it's real, what it's really like, is what we're like when we're at our worst. Your culture really shows up in tough times. And so if you say these are the five things on the wall that we really role model, but none of them show up in tough times, then you know you don't really have that culture. It's only relevant if it shows up when times are tough.
Those are really interesting points. And one of the things I'm thinking about is oftentimes when there is divergence, let's say that you have different sites or different teams or different departments that have completely different cultures, or maybe even in a nuanced way, slightly different cultures. You often don't realize it until it's too late, until there's some sort of instigating event, something happens, it's very clear that it's going on. You mentioned, for instance, asking ourselves these questions. What are some other steps that leaders can preemptively start taking to try to identify those issues before you sometimes have that kind of explosion or conflict, or like you said, have one of those worst times where all of a sudden it becomes very clear?
I think we have to get out of our own heads. No matter the size or how spread out you are, I think leaders doing skip level, spending a lot of time with people at the front lines, the customer front lines of the R&D team of where we're actually building products, spending times in skip levels cuts through a lot of the noise, cuts through a lot of the flowery, like, hey, things are fine over here in the product team. Things are pretty good. Look at our engagement survey results. But if you're not spending time with people in that skip level format, you're not really getting the full story. And you're more likely to be caught off guard by a little bit of fire that's simmering or smoke that's sort of like simmering, you know, kind of in the distance.
The point about skip levels is very, very important, because I think the larger many companies get, the more you start to have lots of layers in between a leader and upper level management. One of the ways that we've seen is a lot of companies are starting to dismantle this structure. What is your opinion on it? Do you think that there should be managers of managers of managers? Do you prefer more direct lines to leadership? Because I do find that as we're starting to grow, on one hand, it's a necessary evil. On the other hand, sometimes creates inefficiency and, as you said, a lot of divergence.
It's certainly zeitgeisty right now, just in terms of general manager span, I believe, is increasing. You see this from various headlines where at Google or Meta or what, take a pick of companies where they're trying to flatten hierarchies, in part because they might believe that, like, hey, through AI, we can actually scale a little bit more effectively right now. And so we're going to expect more from our managers. AI is creating, you know, maybe, or the hope is that it creates more ability to scale for managers to have a greater span. A couple things are apparent for me is that while that might be true, and I think there was some data from Pave recently that they were seeing this or quantifying this, average number of direct reports per manager was increasing in their data set. In a former company, nonetheless, what my experience has been that as your span increases, let's say over 10, at Twitter, we found that when your span of control is over 10, rate of voluntary attrition like doubled. So maybe that won't be the same phenomenon with the ability for managers to stay better plugged in. If we're creating efficiencies for managers and allowing them to scale with AI and new technology so that they can have more direct reports, it has to be coupled in parallel with, like, we're creating higher performing teams, we're creating higher engaged teams. Conversely, what has happened just in the past year, I think the CultureAmp reports on engagement is that engagement in general amongst all their companies that use the platform has actually decreased. So engagement has decreased. So if span of control is increasing in general in our industry and engagement is decreasing, is it really doing a good thing for us by adding more managers' plates, or is it we're just saving money somehow, you know? And I think the reality is some companies might find ways to flatten just for more practical concerns around, we don't think we can justify as many managers. But I worry a little bit that actually there's not positives that are emerging on the other end of that, particularly like long term.
For sure. And I think the more you start to see things like attrition happening and voluntary attrition happening, where top talent is leaving the org, that becomes a real problem for a lot of these big companies. You mentioned before, again, around convergence, divergence, a lot of the discussion right now about diversity and inclusion, it's a big debate right now. And one of the experts we've spoken to in the past talks about this idea of cultural add. She talks about the idea of adding something to your culture, bringing in diverse voices and opinions. Where, in your opinion, does it go from we want to diversify our culture and make it more adaptable or change it for the better, versus we also want to maintain some sort of kind of general consistent culture across different sites? How do you balance those different ideas, which go together, but they still sometimes create conflict?
I think we have to think of our values being collaborative, accountable, ready, and empathetic. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, we have a relatively easy to understand rubric. Like, you go to our careers page, you can kind of understand this is what this company is about. And ideally, as we do that, we attract people from different backgrounds. We attract, you know, different ethnicities, genders, you know, age groups, et cetera. And so why is that important? Because our customers are very diverse. Our customers sit in different countries. They speak different languages. They're going to come from different backgrounds. And so, you know, you build a company that is diverse because of all the research that shows it winds up, you know, with positive benefits in terms of your ability to actually connect with customers and grow a client population that is global in nature. But your question is like, well, does bringing in people with diverse backgrounds and this idea of culture add, will that change your culture in a way that runs counter to what I talked about at the beginning, this idea of convergence and divergence? I don't think it does if the people opt into it. I come from a background of disabilities. Like, me personally, David, grew up with a family with disabilities. I find that as I meet people in the interview process and I kind of connect with them, I can kind of see that in the culture, like, hey, I can see people like me here. I can identify with them. And I really like what they say about collaborative, accountable, ready, empathetic. You can do both, is the point. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I don't think that by culture add, by bringing people in who speak different languages or come from different backgrounds, it will have a bit of a sort of culture meshing that goes on. So an example is how people speak in Copenhagen when I was at Zendesk is very different than how Westerners, Americans speak. How people speak in Poland, where we have a big site and I just visited, is very different. There's cultural differences that exist beyond our care values that we have to learn and appreciate from. And a lot of our focus, we call it inclusion belonging. Some companies call it DEI. A lot of our work more recently on inclusion belonging is bringing us together, being more aware of our differences, celebrating those so we can learn And we can disarm some of the ways that we sort of interact based on our cultural upbringing by shortening that distance, shortening the psychological gap that like, wow, it sounds, you talk very like bluntly. And why is that? Well, that's my culture and it doesn't mean anything from it. That's different than sort of like culture fit or trying to have people like blend in, like don't talk a certain way, talk the way that we right. talk. You know, like I don't believe in that. I believe that you can do both. I believe you can come from a different background. We can learn about you and celebrate that. And you're opting into these care values we talked about.
I think that's a really good point. What are some of the habits or some of the characteristics of the most effective leaders that you've worked with?
It might sound like a simple one, but listening and seeking out feedback and being really curious, fundamentally being really curious about people's perspectives, seeking out diverse opinions, seeking out people who might think different than you rather than I'm looking at the people around me. And that's kind of where I spend 90% of my time each week, my direct reports or my immediate team. The best leaders are just like rabidly, they're like carnivorous around perspectives and opinions and information.
I think those are really, really great points. And I love the idea of building that trust with your direct reports, building that trust with stakeholders. It's key to any sort of success. I'd love to dig in. We have a section on the show called How I Failed. And I'd love to hear from you about something that didn't go as planned, something that failed.
When I was at Twitter, I had this sort of behavioral interviewing framework, this passion around changing how we assess talent. My passion was driving me on this and getting up in front of the company, explaining this new approach, chatting with the CEO about it. He got excited about it. Ultimately, the uptake of this was mediocre at best. And what I failed at in this moment is that like building alliances and sort of like a groundswell of momentum on something, this collective ownership of like, hey, we want this. Like, I want this. And like, so much so that I can kind of fade in the background of like, hey, look what we're doing here. There's a collective, there's a sub team here that is sort of driving. I've initiated something, but now I can kind of step back and they're carrying the torch, if you will. The same example can exist on like leadership development. I want to stand up a leadership development framework. I want to stand up how we sort of guide leaders. If people smell that, like, this is an HR program on this thing, if they smell that this new behavioral, this way we assess talent is an HR thing, it's going to have tissue rejection. If what comes across is like the person presenting this is actually not even an HR person, the person presenting is someone who we just respect. When you think about leadership, this is who we really respect. When you think about assessing talent, wow, that person's really good. And they have the 5 minutes, you know, at the all hands to describe this. I should gladly sit in the background because my learning is it's going to go better if it doesn't appear as though like this is a David thing or this is an HR thing. And having to let go of that and just and not have my pride or sort of my overall work satisfaction be attached with like my recognition or people are connecting this back to me and what I've sort of my thoughts and whatever, I've had to relinquish that.
I think that's a great point. And also it's very effective in lots of other places. It's the reason why people don't like salespeople selling them things. They prefer to hear it from a trusted source. We'll shift into a professional fire round. It's a couple really quick questions aimed to be kind of a line or two. So what is one mindset shift that every people leader should make today?
I think we should probably be spending time every day with AI and learning something new that you can do with AI. Not groundbreaking by any means, but I'm thinking of the post from the Fiverr CEO. It's getting dramatic, but his point was like, AI is coming for your jobs. And if you're not spending time every day learning something new on AI, taking a course for LinkedIn Learning or sort of learning something, a new GPT, a new sort of custom GPT that you could build on your own now, if you're not doing that every day, you're probably losing ground in your future career viability.
AI is here. You're either a passenger or you're the conductor, and it's up to you to decide what you're going to do. What is a tool or practice that you rely on daily?
I find that if I go for a walk, a quick walk outside, or I just sort of practice my breathing a little bit, I'm going to be more effective for the next few meetings.
I think that's so true. And it really boosts creative thinking. I feel like I should start mandating walks for my team. What is a piece of advice you would give to new HR leaders who are stepping in either into a C-suite role or into a senior role?
It seems simple, but taking notes is a big one. A lot of our credibility is going to come in the form of our relationship with the C-suite, a relationship with their direct reports as well.
I would love to hear about a piece of media. It could be a book, it could be a TV show, it could be something that you're listening to. I'd love to hear about something that you're enjoying listening to or consuming right now.
Pave puts out this really great insights. If you go just to their LinkedIn page and their posts from their CEO, they put out really great insights around compensation, benchmarking, span of control, attrition, et cetera. Another really great resource I lean on is just my community. And so, and that's not media, not a website by any means, but probably even a stronger endorsement for finding who your community is. That's going to make you feel much more sane and help you validate some of your thinking.
David, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. If our listeners want to hear or learn more about you, what can they do?
So LinkedIn, I'm not on Twitter, I'm not anywhere else. Feel free to follow me or connect with me there. That's my home base.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure learning from you.
Likewise, thank you for having me.
It was really eye-opening speaking with David today. And I learned a couple things that I want to implement with my team. First, this idea of divergence and convergence around culture. Asking the question, when are we at our worst? And to try to understand what kind of values and cultural aspects come out during those times is really illuminating for figuring out whether our culture is aligned and if there are things we need to do to fix it. I also love the idea about building trust with stakeholders and your team as being a key tactic in order to succeed in any role. And also beyond that, thinking about learning as an everyday practice, whether it's AI or anything else, every day making sure that you're spending time learning new and innovative technologies is critical for success in any role. I'm so happy that we got a chance to speak with David today and really excited to implement some of these practices. Our next stand-up is in 2 weeks. Before you go, if you found this episode thought-provoking, consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about our conversation or more takeaways to help with all the leadership roles you play, visit monday.com or sign up for our newsletter. Links are in the show notes. We'll see you at our next stand-up.